So the question is, when consciousness becomes aware of itself and perceives that it's other, it's as if consciousness changes. Well, that's very interesting, because from the perspective of consciousness itself, nothing has changed. But from the perspective of the perceiver of consciousness, it's different. But both of those attributes are contained in consciousness because it's inherent to its own nature. So the Veda addresses, different parts of the Veda address different perspectives. One part of the Veda addresses the observation of relativity from the perspective of consciousness. Oh, it's all illusion, it's all Maya. Another views consciousness from the perspective of relativity. Oh, there's a unified field there, we can prove it. All these concepts, and they all tie together. There's got to be one thing that tied them together. Can't touch it, but a lot of arrows are pointing in that direction. So there's pure consciousness, pure isness, which never changes, which is eternal. And there's Brahman. Brahman is the wholeness that includes relativity and the absolute, pure isness. It's called Brahman. In the state of cosmic consciousness, in early enlightenment, you're awake to the absolute, and you know that that is what you really are. But it's separate from relativity. Relativity is virtual. There's the marriage isn't there. In the state of Brahman consciousness, everything becomes unified. It ceases to be that this bottle of water is like a projection on the backdrop, a virtual projection on the backdrop of the absolute. This bottle of water is the absolute. This bottle of water is God. Everything is contained in this bottle of water. It's kind of heady until you know. Yeah. They say, in fact, it says in the Veda that the course of action is unfathomable. The nature of life and existence is unfathomable. It doesn't say it's unfathomable until you're enlightened and then it becomes fathomed. It says it's unfathomable. But unfathomability it takes on a new meaning. It takes on a new meaning. Everything unifies in that unfathomable field that you are. All the contradiction, all the paradox, you become the home of all of that. Inherent in your own unfathomable nature, everything comes together. And that is so sweet. Life is so sweet. Your own nature is so sweet. And it couldn't possibly be anywhere near that sweet if it was fathomable. Its inexplicable nature no word is big enough enhances its greatness, not a big enough word. Makes its greatness infinite, not a big enough word. The experience of that is called bliss. Not a giddy, oh, we're all in bliss. No. A profound sweetness of the unfathomable nature of your own being that contains within it all knowledge of everything. And that's just who you are. It's who you are. It takes a while to get comfortable, even walking. After that happens, it takes some time. It takes some getting used to. Any sense of emptiness, any sense of abyss, ceases to be hollow and takes on the opposite value. Limitless grandeur, absolute fullness, complete and total fulfillment, inexplicable profundity. You see, not a mood, it's not a theory, it's not an attitude, it just is. You have to learn to live with it. That much ecstasy is almost unbearable. Almost unbearable. Yeah. And then you get used to it. Sometimes I compare it to waking up in the morning, and it's like if one morning you woke up and all of a sudden you had three arms, that's all you'd think about all day long. I got three arms. But how many people today were walking around saying, oh my God, I got two arms. No, you're just used to it. It becomes the same. And then you're able, you function, you're in the world, but you're not of it. You're not of it. You still love your family. You still go through the whole range of human emotion. You get mad, you get upset, you get hurt, you get sad. This is still going on. and it's all unified. It's hard to describe, you know. It's hard to describe, but you want to describe it, you know. You want to share it. You want to show it to other people, you know. And the awakening to that is likened, they call it, to traversing the razor's edge. It's highly elusive. Highly elusive. Profoundly elusive. Buddha called it the middle way, because there is no way. There's no way. It's what lies between all the different ways. In the Vedic tradition, neti, 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 not that, not that, not that. If you say you get it, you don't get it. It's not that. No. 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 No, 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 no. It's beyond thingness. It's no thingness. It's pure isness, which is beyond thingness. It's not even a ness. It just is. When I go like that, I'm not even paying attention to whether or not it makes sense. I'm just describing it. I'm describing the experience, so I don't know if it makes sense or not. It doesn't need to make sense. For that reason, when the master speaks, it immediately ceases to be what the master said and becomes what the listener heard. And that's why you can't take the teachings of a Buddha or Krishna or any of them and put it in a book. It's not what he said anymore. Even his words, written down word for word, it's not what he said anymore. It's too subtle. It's a razor's edge. It's finer than that. So, the art of teaching is the art of freeing an individual from their own identity. It's called emancipation for a reason. It's emancipation. It's freedom from everything you think you know, everything you think you are, everything you think you understand. It's emancipation. It's liberation. It's the death of death. Because identity is death. It's death of wakefulness to your own true nature.